Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Now, who's today's guest? Well, he's an Ivor Novello nominated and Telly Award-winning composer, known for working on epic orchestrations to small ensemble and hybrid electronic pieces for film, TV and video games. Let's welcome to the show the fabulous Walter Mayer. Walter, how are you?
Hi, thank you. Very good to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Now, you are in my hometown of London, right?
I am indeed, not too far away from, I think, where you used to live, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I feel very nostalgic to be speaking to you based on that fact. So how are you? Because you're actually originally from Austria, aren't you?
I am indeed, yeah.
So how are you enjoying London? I mean, obviously right now it's a little tricky because we're in COVID-19 times. But generally, how do you love London?
I really love it. You know, when I moved here in 2006, 2007, like 14 whatever years ago, I made a conscious decision to go to move to London after, you know, having grown up in Austria and then having gone to university there. And then I went in Germany to work there on feature films for almost 2 years. And then I decided to go to London, which for me is like the hub to be. It's such a great kind of city to be in Europe and still working on projects within a reach distance to America.
Whereabouts in Austria were you born? Did you live?
I was born just surrounding Vienna. So I was seeing myself as a Viennese composer, even though I'm just from outside.
Right. Okay, I've been to Austria many times.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I like it very much.
Did you go skiing?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Amazing skiing.
It is indeed. Austrians kind of ski before they can walk.
Lech,
Vorarlberg.
Nice right? Area. And St. Anton and Zürs, all that sort of area.
Absolutely perfect.
Oh, really? Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, so tell me, so you grew up in Austria, you moved to London. Were you, because clearly you're so incredibly talented and so successful. Am I right in presuming that music came early into your life, that you were a very musical child? Or did you find it later as a teenager?
Yeah, I started quite early on. So my mom used to be a singing teacher. And as such, she often gave kind of lessons to, you know, especially gifted kind of students at home in our house. So I was around, surrounded with music all the time. And there was a piano in my room, in my kind of child room. And I kind of started playing the piano at the age of, I don't know, three and a half years. I had no idea what I'm doing here. I just broke one hand after the other, very much to the annoyance of my mom. But eventually, you know, you play along songs from, I don't know, Queen or Elton John. You just play along on the radio, on the piano. And eventually you get an idea of how this instrument works. And luckily, my parents then kind of supported me. I then had a few lessons and then I started the trumpet.
So you're a multi-instrumentalist?
I would say trumpet, piano, and that's roughly it.
Okay.
I stopped playing the trumpet because, you know, when you're in your teenage years, a trumpeter is not the kind of coolest instrument. You would rather play drums or guitar. So at that time, I kind of swapped to piano, kind of to really kind of play that and just enhance my playing techniques and skills. And that's kind of where it all started. And then, you know, I bought myself a synthesizer when I was kind of 16, kind of an old school analog synth. And that's what got me into writing music, to play with the instrument, produce some sounds and see how it goes.
So what was the first piece of music you ever composed?
It was actually from my GCSEs at the end of high school, a piece that was part of my GCSEs. So I kind of, one of the majors that I went through is music. And in that I had to write the song and analyze. And it was kind of in the style of Maurice Ravel's Bolero, something that kind of builds over the time. And over time, so more and more instruments come in. And that's when I realized, actually, it's really good to be doing that and maybe focusing my career on that.
So as I said in the introduction, you work with big orchestras and you also work in a more intimate setting. Do you have a preference to either, or do you just love doing a variety? Working in a variety of ways?
It's definitely the latter. I really like and kind of express myself musically, and it can be anything from like tiny, tiny, nuanced, just a cello and a few kind of electronic synths on the side, or it can be as big as an 80-piece orchestra and 40-piece choir, which I've done a few times. So I think for me, it's more finding a voice for each project, just to try to be as genuine and as unique in a way to describe the project with your music.
Because you have worked, as we were just discussing, on numerous different projects. So one of the, I mean, obviously you won a 2 Telly Awards, didn't you? Best Original Music for the scores for the BAFTA E Mobile Game of the Year, Call of Duty Mobile, as well as the score for the Netflix docuseries Formula One Drive to Survive. So, I mean, very different genres. What's the process and how do you go from one to the other?
I think it's about you have to distill which project needs kind of what kind of requirements, what instruments. Is it an electronic score? Is it an acoustic score? Is it string quartet or big orchestra? And I usually have to a spotting session like every composer has with directors. And in that session, we talk about the use of music. And sometimes he or she would use temp music. And the temp music is usually kind of the red kind of flag. It's like, no, let's not go to the temp score because we want to be unique and find our own voice. But sometimes it's helpful to have at least something to grasp onto to say, okay, the director uses this and that score for a specific reason. And then I try to decipher why they're using a specific track as a guide for the composer. And then I take away, it could be the instrumentation, it could be the tempo, it could be the energy. And then I decipher that and make my own thing of that, which could be totally different. Like we go from an 80-piece orchestral, big in-your-face score to something totally different, intimate. And maybe it's just the melody, the lyric melody the director liked. And the rest is just kind of blown up out of proportion. They never like that. So, it's those kind of early conversations that are very creative. And I really like doing that and having the director over. Because usually at that stage, he's been through quite a lot. He's been watched around from producers, from execs. He had a long day in the edit. And then usually in the evening, he comes to me in the studio. And then we talk about different directions and what he can do. And I try to keep my studio a safe haven for directors. Like, they come in and they can lie down on the couch and just, chill for 5 or 10 minutes.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
So you've got a bit of a headspace thing going on, like the app, right?
Yeah, totally. I usually think directors, when they come in, they're hyped up because their day has been busy. They might have been to the grade or to the edit or something else. There's a lot going on in their minds. And when it comes to music, which is so emotionally kind of driven, I just want them to have a good time. Have a quick sip of coffee, just sit down on the couch, relax for 5-10 minutes, check your emails, and when you're ready, then we go into the art and then we start the process.
Well, I've read that your sound is described as creativity with genuine sounds, experimenting with unique sonic worlds for each of your projects, using extensive collection of your analog digital synths and blending live orchestral arrangements with experimental post-recording techniques. Would you say that just about sums it all up?
It does indeed, yeah.
Okay, so good.
I try to find found sounds, something you find in your studio. It could be an instrument, could be anything. And you produce a note, a tone with that. And you see where it leads you. It could be a synthesizer, then it's quite concrete. You know what are you going to do with that? It could be an instrument I bought somewhere, I had it imported from Asia or from South Africa or somewhere that I've never played before. And I'm very naive. I just take the instrument and just produce some tones. I would watch a YouTube video to see how roughly it works and then, find my own way. And that way, because I don't have a preconception to the instrument, I'm quite naive. I'm like, it's like a toddler playing with a new toy that they just found.
It's all about YouTube University, isn't it?
It is.
We use that all the time, but not for anything nearly as creative as you use it for.
It's great for anything that you kind of need to learn.
Really? Anything that you need to learn. If you go onto YouTube, someone's done it and someone can help you.
And someone's done it better. So you learn a lot.
Well, probably not better than you.
Different.
Good answer. So one of your more recent projects is the psychological horror movie, The Unfamiliar, which isn't out yet, is it?
No, it's correct. It comes out on the 21st of August in America.
So tell me about that process. I've heard some of the music from the movie and it's very, that the music definitely gives you the element of terror to add along with the visuals that you're watching. I mean, really, it's brilliantly scored. So congratulations for that. I'm sure it will be incredibly well received. But I mean, I have to tell you, I was watching some of the movie last night and my wife and I were sitting there and the music was sort of terrifying us a lot more of the time than what we were actually watching on the screen, but a beautiful compliment to one another.
Yeah, thank you. That was a very interesting kind of journey. I met the producer and director. I even can't remember how, but we met via a befriended post-production supervisor or someone like that. And we got to talk about their movie. And they're like, hey, we just shot that. We are going to the edit now. If you want, come along, have a listen. And that's what I did. And I had a quick kind of look at the film and like quite early stages. And they hadn't committed to a composer at that stage. And we just discussed the temp score again, why it's in there, why I think I know why it's in there, but I think it can be quite unique, it can be different. And then I had the idea of saying, okay, because of the topic and because of what the film is about and being possessed and what that means and everything, I thought, why don't we use a lead instrument, a cello, and treat that, kind of treat it quite badly with different effects, kind of playing it with the metal side of a bow instead of, you know, a horsehair or anything, just like that. And it's kind of the spark. So I then decided that actually the cello doesn't cut it. It needs something a bit more bassier and bigger and more, yeah, darker. So I decided to look it up on the internet and I found this instrument builder in Switzerland who produces a octobass, which is like double the size of a double bass. And double bass are quite big in an orchestra.
Double the size of a double bass?
Double, it's massive. And so height-wise, it wouldn't fit into my studio. I had it kind of bespoke built, and it's based on a double, on an octobass. It's not an original octobass. It's just kind of a very, very super large double bass. And the string is almost the size of a finger, which is ridiculous big and large. And when I tried to get it shipped to London, it didn't work because of restrictions, and it would have been super expensive. So I had a friend of mine, an assistant at the time in Austria, to go to Switzerland, pick it up. Then I flew to Austria to record it there because I thought the next best to me from London is go to Austria, which is close to Switzerland. The instrument was kind of built and custom made, and spend a week or 2 weeks there and just sample everything, like play it, hammer it, use mallets, use mounted metal chains onto the strings and play the strings. And because they start resonating, they create this very drawny, bassy kind of out-of-worldish sound, yet it has this organic texture to it.
And where is that instrument now?
It's still in Austria. I can't move anywhere. And it's still in a friend's parents' house, and they hate me for that.
It sounds like it needs to be in a museum or something, in a museum for, like, musical instruments.
It should be. And there's a few octobasses that actually are in museums. I just looked it up the other day. There's one, I think, in Denmark.
Octobase.
Luckily, my instrument, even though it's large and massive, it's not quite as large as the real octobass.
Okay.
You can still just about transport it, but you would need a big van for that.
Wow. Well, I mean, that in itself sounds quite extraordinary. And I'm going to look up an octobass after we finish speaking. Yeah. You must send me a photograph of yours, actually. Will you do that? Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. So obviously we've all been living through the crazy time and that is coronavirus, and we've all been in lockdown. And how has your COVID been so far? I mean, in a creative capacity, I presume you're in a home studio right now. For the listeners out there, I can see Walter and he's sitting in a studio with lots of equipment around him. So is that your home studio or is that an out of home studio?
I've got two studios. One is in Soho. It's like the bigger kind of representative. And then I've got a second studio at home, which is more my creative hub. There's like analog synths and modular synths. It's quite, you know, it can
be. Is that where you are now?
That's where I'm at the moment, yeah.
So is that where you've basically based yourself during the whole pandemic?
That's correct, yeah. That's correct.
Right.
So it's quite easy to be creative here and work. And you couldn't go to Soho. You know, lockdown and social distancing didn't allow that. And I didn't want to take any risk. So I thought, okay, I'm here. It's my creative hub anyway, and it's a great place to write music.
So how has your creative process changed during this time, or is it basically the same?
It's pretty the same. I'm lucky because I had a project that kind of led into COVID, into lockdown. That meant I wouldn't have to really think about what I'm doing or how to change things, because of the necessity of finishing the soundtrack, I would have to just, you know, do the best I can, not think twice. Once I finished this project, I was then going through this stage of, okay, what do you do next? How can you go about going to Soho, to the studio? How do I, you know, make this work? And to be honest, I found it quite easy from a just creativity point of view. As soon as I go into my studio here, I lock and kind of close the door behind me, I know that I'm kind of in a safe environment. This is my creative space. I'm going to go outside and, you know, I go into the garden or do anything else. But this is kind of my sanctuary.
Yeah. Well, you're lucky to have a sanctuary like that. Not many people do, I think. So it's fortuitous for you. So are there directors out there that you would still love to work with? Do you have like a top three of people you would just adore to be creative with or for?
Well, absolutely, because you know, there's quite a few directors out there. Just some of them have a very specific look and feel in the way they use the music. Like, for instance, David Fincher's use of the music in Social Network, I think was kind of a really breakthrough in terms of how you use music. And righteously, the got nominated and won the Oscar for the score. And I think a director of that scope, of that kind of upper echelon, a person like him, he can really push through the boundaries and encourage their composers to do something new or fresh or different. And, you know, I like doing that. At the same time, I love independent directors who are kind of yet to break through because they're a bit more rock and roll. Anything is possible. They don't have those restrictions yet because they're not working with a big studio. So I think I want to keep the balance between working with established directors and up and coming and rising talents.
And do you know what your next project is going to be?
Yes, I do.
Oh, can you share that with us or is it top secret?
I can't say much other than it's a sci-fi thriller.
Okay.
Partly shot in London and in Thailand. It looks absolutely gorgeous. Like each frame is like from a commercial. It looks perfect and the story is really good.
Have you already started on that or not yet?
Yeah, we had the spotting session. I'm kind of in the age of writing music for that.
So how long is that process in your spotting stage right now? When would you expect your full score to be finished?
This one is different just because I'm in quite early on. So they still have to do a few days of shooting because of Corona, everything was locked down. So in the next few weeks, they're going to go back and edit. And there's a rough edit at the moment, which I've seen. So this is a very early stage where you just draft a few kind of ideas. You send it to the director. He might play with that. He might use it in the kind of assembly edit and play with that. So this is a very early on creative approach. And it's quite nice for a change because very often you come in at the last hour, at the last minute.
And do you know where we'll be able to see this project when it comes out? Or is that top secret too? Which is fine.
It's definitely coming out next year.
Is it TV or film?
It's a proper feature. Like, feature. It's a really good cast. I'm really excited about it. It's a very now and in cast. Like
okay.
The lead actor from an actress from big Netflix.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I'm going to be bugging you over the next few months to find out when I can see it. We'll have to do another podcast to promote it.
I would love to, yeah.
Okay, good. So now, as you know, the podcast is called For Love and Music. And as I've mentioned to other guests over the past months, I called it For Love and Music because those are the two reasons that I moved to LA. One, because I fell madly in love. And two, because for me, I felt that the music industry was, the epicenter was very much here in LA. So I like to ask everyone a couple of little love questions that I throw in sneakily. So, and I always ask everyone this question, has love ever guided you to make an unexpected career decision?
100%. I wouldn't be in London if it wasn't for my wife.
Well, there you go.
100%,
I wouldn't be in LA if it wasn't for my wife either.
There we go.
Right? So she's British?
No, she's Austrian.
Oh, she's Austrian. Okay.
London ever since she was kind of little.
Okay.
In the summertime, she would spend a lot of time in London and, you know, have au pair jobs, etc.
Yeah.
And it was clear as soon as she's out of uni, she will move to London. And I happened to come in on the way and, you know, there was not much of a decision to be made. Like either LA or London, we said at the time we went for London.
So how did you meet?
That gets even more cliche at university.
Well, that's lovely. I love that it's so sort of simple in the way that love happened. How fabulous.
It is because both of us had a different kind of journey beforehand. I studied medicine before I went into music. So I had a few years there. So I was kind of a bit more senior when I went into composition.
Okay.
And you don't want to waste any time then.
Absolutely. Well, you still look very young.
Oh, thank you.
And what does your wife do?
She's a creative. She's a head of art in a big advertising agency.
Amazing.
We're both in creative kind of fields, which is quite nice because the other partner understands when there's crunch time.
Yes, absolutely. And do you have a song that resonates romantically with you both?
I think we missed out on that just because when we got together, I was more softy and Nikki really listened more to kind of heavy music. I was like, okay, we definitely have to find a bridge to gap.
Find that gap? Did you find that song or not really? You're still working on it?
Interestingly, I now hooked her on kind of, let's say, film music, which is a bit more repetitive, interesting, like Ludovico Einaudi, Philip Glass, Max Richter, and she absolutely loves listening to these compositions.
So do you play your music to her before you send it off to the various clients that you work for, or do you just get on with it and show her afterwards, or she hears it on the film or TV show?
The funny thing is, and I heard this many times from even really big established composers, is you still feel like a bit insecure when the music is finished. You're actually like, okay, you just play to the director and let's see how it goes. You wouldn't even want to share it with others. Once it's out there and it's available on the CD, then you know, okay, you've done it, tick the box, everything is fine. Then sometimes I play her a cue to say, hey, or I just played it instead on the hi-fi. She would listen to it and she'd say, oh, I really like it. Like, oh, yeah, by the way, it's for me.
Yeah, sometimes it's harder, isn't it, to share things with your nearest and dearest because their opinion matters so much, right?
Like, even without saying a thing, you would know how she would feel about the music, which makes me second guessing if that is the real kind of, if that's the way the music should be.
I totally understand that. So how would you like the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years to pan out for you? What are your aspirations?
I would just like to keep working on really creative briefs. There's nothing more boring than if someone sends you a temp score and says, oh yeah, can you copy that? It's not a job for me. I would really like to bring myself into each job and, you know, like you said earlier, define the song and define the sound for each project. So ideally, I would grow to work on bigger projects at the same time, keep working indie films, just a nice balance of different kind of capacities, different films, high budget, low budget, everything in between. Just keep it kind of challenging and interesting.
Those listeners out there who may be dreaming of wanting to be a composer or a producer, what advice would you give? Obviously, you have to have talent, but what advice would you give to sort of break into that arena? Because it's not easy. A lot of people want to be composers and work on amazing movies and also have the talent, but just never get the break. So what's your tips for the top?
I know really amazing kind of talents like producers and songwriters and composers who sit in their basements writing the most amazing music on their laptops, because that's all you need these days in order to write really kind of interesting music. And they just don't get the chance to go out and find and meet people. So I would always encourage people to say, the more you go out, and even if you're an introvert, push yourself at least once a week or twice a week to go outside and meet someone. In London, it's easy. There's this pub culture. You just meet producers, directors, you hang out somewhere in Soho or any other place. Just go out, music supervisors, directors, talk to them and have a loose conversation. Eventually, with those bridges, those tiny bridges you build, eventually something comes back. But, you know, really push yourself to go out there. And if you hear no, don't take no for an answer. There's always kind of a, oh, by the way, we've met 6 months ago. Do you remember? Oh, I've just written this amazing piece. Have a listen. And maybe it just fits in there looking for someone.
Yeah, it's perseverance and hard work and definitely not taking no as the definitive answer. In any part of the entertainment industry, whether you're a composer or an actor or whatever you might be, there are so many knockbacks before you, generally, not to everyone, but generally there are a whole load of knockbacks before you get that yes and before you get the opportunity to move forward. So you must always keep on going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, thank you so much. You've been an absolutely amazing guest. I'm so excited to see and listen to the next projects that you'll be working on. And hopefully, you know, you must come back on the show at a later date to promote your top secret project and any others that you might have. And yeah, in the meantime, I hope you stay safe and healthy during these crazy times. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me and have a great time and stay safe and healthy throughout this entire time.
Oh, thank you. And to all of our For Love and Music listeners, you've been listening to another show with me, Tara Joseph, and you'll be hearing from me again very soon. Thanks so much. Stay safe. Bye.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.